Sir
Stevens.
Stevens.
Yeah.
Is your boss at NBS?
Yes.
At the beginning.
She was a computer specialist.
Uh-huh.
Her strong point was writing and editing and reviewing the literature. So if you look up M.E. Stevens or Mary Elizabeth Stevens in any bibliography, you will find things like she did the with Tom Begg, the replication, a state of the art report. She was very good at collecting information and published literature and reducing it to a state of the art summary. She was very good at that, and that's what the cooperation convertibility stuff was. She said to the Bureau of Standards, I might want her to do something else, so I want her to be an employee with an appointment that's called WAE, when actually employed, you get paid, okay? And sure enough, I can't remember exactly what she switched me to soon after I started working with her, but it was a very useful interaction. And I worked with her on that WAE basis, I think, for 3 years. I was living in Aberdeen, and I came down and got work and went back home and did the work and came down and brought that and went back home and did more and so forth. In 1967, Dick retired and we moved to Bethesda. And at that time, they asked me to consider coming on full-time. And Dick was in graduate school at Catholic University, and part-time studies and part-time thesis work. So he stayed home with the children, and I went to work full-time at the Bureau of Standards.
In 67,
yeah.
Uh-huh, okay.
And he used to put Laura, our youngest, on the bus for kindergarten every morning. Every day. I don't know whether she was in the morning or the afternoon session, but he put her on the bus, and the little boy down the street finally said to him, are you Laura's mother? Oh, because he was a house husband before the phrase was invented.
Yeah. Oh.
Now, I'm sure that's true of Claire Schultz's husband.
Right. Yeah, I think so. Now, someplace along the way, you were doing some work with the Federal Library Committee also.
Yes.
This was part of the NBS work.
I was a member of the... Yes. When I first started to work with Mary Elizabeth at the Bureau of Standards, Sam Alexander was the head of what was then the computer department, or whatever the name of it was, okay? Information Technology Division. He was Sam Alexander. And he asked me to work with him rather than try to find out, I can supply it later, but there was a review or a state-of-the-art or something report of interest to and aimed at the Federal Library Committee that he asked me to help with. And as a result of that, the Federal Library Committee asked me to join their task force on automation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that. Now, that was strictly extracurricular. I had approval from Sam, and then from the... It seems to me that Herb Grosch came in there at some point as the head of the, what was head, when we moved out to Gaithersburg, the Information Technology Division became the Center for Computer Sciences and Technology. And Herb came on board. And I had known Herb since the days when he was at GE pushing the machine that was going to take Perry's searching selector, you know, into the new world.
Right.
And then he was replaced fairly after a couple of years, I guess, by Ruth Davis. And now what was and she, both of them approved of my doing this task force on automation, going mm-hmm. to Federal Library mm-hmm. Committee meetings. You noticed that in my bibliography several presentations were about the programs of the federal libraries.
Well, it looks like to me that you sort of became the guru on federal library automation.
Yes, and I was the point person in the Center for Computer Sciences on library applications and documentation, as opposed to the information processing and data processing mm-hmm. that the rest of the center was working on, things like Tom Bagg's optical character recognition standards, and on Fortran standards, and on COBOL standards, and on magnetic tape standards, you know, and the Federal Information Processing Standards Series, FIPS.
FIPS.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now you knew Tom Bagg, but didn't work with him.
Only in that we were in the same organizational unit, mm-hmm. yeah.
Now I assume you know he died
yes.
a year or so ago.
Yes. I went to his funeral and it was just beautiful.
Was it? Mm-hmm.
He was Scotch through and through, and they had a bagpiper out there. You know, that was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, he's one on my list of pioneers.
Yes, he certainly.
So I did not realize he had died, and I emailed NBS folks to try and find him, and they said he had died. And then I said, "Well, do you know what happened to his papers?" And it turned out they had done apparently the really nice thing that they had split them up between two or three places that were really interested in that kind of thing.
Oh.
So now I have not talked with his widow yet, and I thought I would do that.
Betty, yes.
Just to see what's left.
Now she's got a new address, do you?
Does she?
Other than his you had his old Potomac address, didn't you?
No, I didn't have actually, but they gave me her current address.
In Russell Avenue in Gaithersburg?
That's right.
Okay,
yeah.
Because he had a house, a little old charming cottage in Potomac, when Potomac was the outskirts, you know, just, and now mm-hmm. Potomac is just overrun with $500,000 houses
yeah.
and $1.5 million houses and so forth. Congressional Country Club and stuff like that. Well, he had this little old house, and we went up there one time visiting, and he said, I said something about the shed out in the field, and he said, that's where my journal of the Optical Society of America or some professional journal is housed. And we went out to look, and it was just stuffed to the gills. And it wasn't waterproof, it wasn't humidity proof, it was just stuffed full of magazines and journals that were falling apart. Mm. And I said, Tom, these are no good. And he said, I'm not going to throw them away. And his office, he had an office bigger than this, and it was just up to the ceiling, everywhere. And he knew where everything was, you know, but he just was a pack rat.
Well, good. That means he should have had a good collection of stuff to disperse.
Oh, yes. And he was in on microfilm and
right.
optical character recognition and
yeah.
early computers, mm-hmm. yeah. If you can find out who has anything, that's a...
Well, they said some went to Michigan with the power collection on the microfilm
okay,
stuff.
Okay.
And I've forgotten.
Okay.
Some have stayed at NBS and... but it sounded like all the right places based on
okay, good, so. Good.
Well, let's go back. Now, sort of it happened semi-accidentally that you became the federal guru for federal library automation?
I had always had my foot in each camp.
Uh-huh.
I was friendly with and got along well and worked with on various projects. Librarians in the Federal Library community. I also was a SciTech information type, you know. I worked, and that's why I could speak up to Henriette Avram, you know, who wouldn't dismiss me as not worth her concern, but would tell me what her concern was and ask me to bring the whole, you know, to pull mm-hmm. the other community mm-hmm. in where they belong, that kind of thing, you know. So that for me to become, I couldn't become a member of the Federal Library Committee because I didn't run a federal library, but I could become a member of the Task Force on Automation because I knew library automation, and I could talk to both camps, if you will.
And the librarians didn't mind, here comes Madeline Henderson without her MLS?
No, because I never tried to run their business, mm-hmm. you know. I just talked to them about the things that I could talk about that I wanted them to be interested in.
Yeah. Standardization?
Yeah, standardization and automation and cooperative processing and that sort of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned ANSI, the Z39 standard.
Yeah.
What was your initial role with this?
I was a member of the committee, the COSATI standard for technical reports was taken up by ANSI, and I was a member of that committee. I think I might have chaired the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to develop a standard technical report format that would please both private sector organizations that were generating reports mm-hmm. and the federal sector that had a pretty well established and mandated format.
Mm-hmm. Was the Federal Library Committee a well functioning organization when
yes.
you first became involved?
Yes.
Primarily because of whom?
Well, they had common problems that they had, and they had a house in the Library of Congress. They had the support of the librarian, mm-hmm. Al Quincy Mumford, and Kurt Silke was the first executive secretary, was a real go-getter, real. When he decided to take the job as head of the Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, I applied for his job. And I think I could have done the job, and I could have been, I would have gotten along all right with all the librarians. But I didn't have the credentials, you know, mm. the people, the search committee didn't accept the idea of a non-librarian as head of the, so they brought in Jim Riley,
mm-hmm.
who was very good. And then it got to be almost entirely the function of the Federal Library Committee as the node of OCLC got to kind of wag the dog.
Yeah, that's
the dog,
what I've heard
yeah.
too. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Hmm. The National Bureau of Standards had a job advertised as Director of Technical Information, and it would be over the publications division and the library division, okay? And I applied for that, made up all my CV and so forth. And I got a letter back saying, I had no idea that you did all this. But they gave it to an administrative type, you know, hmm. from the Office of Administration. And I don't think he lasted very long, but anyway, I had to smile to myself. I had no idea you had all these qualifications and background.
Yeah. What about office management? Now, how large was your staff when you were the section chief?
I think we had, it was a small section, four or five professionals and two or three clerical help.
Mostly keeping up with all these various issues.
What we did, and this is why the master's program was so useful, what had been happening before I became section chief is that the section collected information and shelved it. You know, reports from NTIS and books and subscriptions to journals and so forth. And that room, that library, was something of a reading room for some people who'd come by and look at the latest issues of some of the journals. But in the meantime, other sections and divisions were collecting their own stuff, and the section was getting progressively less meaningful to the center. Center for Computer Sciences became an Institute for Computer Sciences, one of those modifications that again is a power struggle. Ruth Davis wanted to be on the same level as the director of the Institute of Basic Standards and the director of the Institute of Measurement Services, the core science that the National Bureau of Standards stood for. And so when I took this course and my research practicum was how to modify and bring the section into the mainstream of the Institute, I recommended that we, at this point, everything that came in was being processed in the sense that it was being recorded and indexed and so forth, but nobody ever consulted the indexes, and it was a complete duplication of what was done for technical, you know, for government reports and NTIS. I think we were on the standard distribution list for computer reports, you know. So I stopped the processing, and I recommend that we shelve things by date of acquisition and consult with the existing, use the existing services to index and so forth. And we turned our attention to us using the literature to prepare reports, a little bit like Mary Elizabeth's state-of-the-art reports and so forth. And my plea for the, when the decision was, I thought, being considered what to do with the division of, I was the computer information section, and I think we were in the division of information technology or something. My thought was that our people would work with the specialists, the hardware specialists and the software specialists, to do this review and collection of literature on a given topic, and we'd work together to produce reports. But that didn't work out.
Any idea why?
Well, as I say, it was a power struggle, and the guys who were hardware specialists figured only they know the hardware, so why would we want anybody else to interfere? And what they did was hire, you know, was to place the people that I figured would work in the computer information section. They physically placed them in the hardware section or the software section. So, and what they ever got to do, I don't know. I had a chance to get out, early retirement, and so I took it, and that's when I started consulting. And I consulted for 10 years, and I think in my CV I spoke of some of the agencies that I worked with, and the thread running through most of that is standardization.
As it had been during your years at ADS. So you saw your consulting as a follow-on?
Yes.
Now, was this mostly pretty well-funded consulting, something you could do a couple of days a week at home?
Yes.
And go in?
And go into offices and do things like that.
How did you get this work?
People called me. I didn't have to support myself or my family because I had a retirement and my husband had a retirement, okay? When we got old enough, we got social. Because I worked those 10 years, I was eligible for Social Security, too.
Mm-hmm.
And word of mouth, you know, people call up and say, will you come and talk to us? And I'd talk to them about what they wanted done, and then I'd submit a proposal. So many hours of work over so many such and such a period, you know, 2 days a week over the next 3 months or something like that. And I found it very interesting. And as far as I know, people were satisfied, although the Cindy agencies, I don't think ever did anything with all the good advice I gave them.
Oh, yeah? That's still sitting in some drawer?
I suppose. You know, it's just like people, Colin Burke tried to say about the Weinberg report and the Crawford report and the SATCOM report. You know, big fanfare when they're introduced and never heard of again. Not quite true, but all of these things sink into the subconscious and affect the way you do business.
Yeah.
Down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to get the four reports processing agencies and the GPO together on the processing of technical reports.
Now this is while still at NBS, right?
No, when I was consulting.
Oh, I thought you did some work with them while you were at NBS, because that's one of my questions.
Okay.
I may have gotten that wrong. You didn't do GPO, NTIS, trying to...
No, that was when I was consulting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I thought it was when you were with NBS, but... Because this is one of the great curiosities. I teach a course in government information.
Okay.
So I've been following this over the years, and I've never understood, and I want to ask... Melvin Day, when I talk with him tomorrow, why couldn't GPO and NTIS ever get together? But let's go back specifically what you were doing.
Turn your machine off for a minute.
I'm afraid you'd say that.
Just
the right buttons. Okay.
You were asking the question
about NTIS.
And why don't NTIS and GPO get together?
Right.
Did you read my government publication reports? Articles in which I championed that idea?
No, I didn't. I saw that on your citation and I kept intending to get a copy of that. This is in Government Publications Review?
Yes. Would you like a copy?
Sure, I'd love that. It'll save me another trip to the library. Now, you did this work while as a freelance consultant?
Yeah.
Okay. But now you also did the compliance of federal agencies with ADP standards. That was while still with NBS.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And then your copyright issues. That's a really big thing that you did a lot of.
Yes, and now I'm still active in this respect. I attend a group that meets for lunch once a month in the dead of summer in Washington. It's called the Copyright Roundtable. It's composed of lawyers, copyright lawyers, for such organizations as the Motion Picture Association of America, the Recording Industry of America, the different law firms that have copyright sections, the administrator of copyright for the American Chemical Society, used to have the Washington representative of the American Library Association, but she hasn't been there, the copyright liaison for the Patent Office. And I keep telling them I'm not active enough to be part of this group, but they keep saying, don't be silly, you're part of us, you know, stay. So I learn a lot. I don't contribute a lot anymore, but I learn a lot. And of course, the current, oh, I tell you who else, is the Association of American Publishers. And the current concern is copyright of electronic, in electronic publishing. And I don't know how you solve that. Because in this course that I took, the internet course, the instructor said several times, everything on the internet is free. If you put it on the internet, it's there. And you don't have any more right, you know, any more protection for it. You know, it's gone. It anybody can do anything. And this is very true. And I don't know.
Well, but
people now violate copyright,
sure.
but it's a drop in the bucket compared to what.
My assumption is that if it's copyrighted by someone, let's say it's a page of some type or a design, that it, you just do like you always did. You had to sue if you saw someone copying it.
Yes.
But the distribution is a lot faster and easier and quicker now if you want to steal something.
And the stealing is a lot easier because
right.
who knows that you, if you downloaded it, that you're going to be doing something
right.
with it. You know?
Right.
Even the for years, I served on the registers committee to examine fair use. Mm-hmm. You know, Section 108 or whatever. The register was supposed to review Section 108 every 5 years, and that's how I got into this copyright roundtable because I was the information science community's representative on that committee, and. The library community was so adamant about fair use. You know, we can make this stuff available. And it wasn't until a couple of people sued, you know, the Kinko kind of operation and the Texaco suit that they... I think that there's a very fine line. I also served on a committee of the American Chemical Society to review the chemical abstracts proposal to distribute, to make available copies of articles that they abstracted.
Mm-hmm.
People read something in chemical abstract and wanted a copy, they could. And we said that's systematic copying, and it's prohibited by the copyright law unless you want to establish a payment system like the Copyright Clearance House. You know.
Were you involved in establishing the Copyright Clearance Center?
No, I was not directly involved. I knew when it was going on, but I was not.
Now your interest in the reason you wrote all of the stuff for the ACES Bulletin was because of your interest in copyright
yes.
and involvement?
And I thought that ACES members should be... I'll tell you another funny story. I also wrote a column every month or every issue on federal information update.
Right.
And I told people what NTIS and GPO and so forth. And I saw Ward Shaw... one time. Now, I consider Ward Shaw a knowledgeable person. He established this Carl system, and he was out in someplace in Colorado, and he was head of the special interest group on library automation and stuff. And I said to him, what do you think about the Federal Information Update column in the Bulletin? And he said, I never read it. And I thought, hot damn, what the federal government does can directly affect you. And if you're not aware of that and don't keep your ears open, you know, you'll get caught with new procedures, new Mm-hmm. How mm-hmm. can you be in the information business without being concerned with what the federal information community mm-hmm. is doing? You can moan and groan and say they're fuddy-duddies and they're